This Assembly Audible podcast is brought to you by Zimmer, supplier of high-quality automation components for robotic handling and manufacturing. Hello, and welcome to Assembly Audible. I'm your host, Jennifer Pierce, multimedia content specialist with Assembly. Our guest today is Dr. Mike Williamson, author of Delivering Safety Excellence, Engagement Culture at Every Level, a practical how-to course in developing an interactive and living culture of safety excellence. Delivering Safety Excellence is a guidebook used at facilities worldwide that addresses the question, how does a team turn a weak operations culture into a world-class, zero-error, globally dominant culture? Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
Jennifer, thank you for asking me. I am looking forward to participating in your webinar. Obviously, this is a passion of mine, and I'm glad to be able to pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you. So for our first question today, in your book, you advise managers to never tie an incentive plan to the incident rate or the lost workday rate. Why is that, and what's a better approach?
The classic is that organizations incentivize a low, what's called a RIF, reportable incident frequency, and that is exactly reactive. So when you have a recordable incident, you react to that recordable incident, and there's a matter of luck in there that goes with that, and there's also a matter of micromanaging. Oh, this is not a lost time injury. And so you're doing a false item to judge and reward people on. And what the book espouses, and there's a discussion in there about reactive measurement and proactive measurement. And the proactive measurement is, how are you engaging your people in eliminating the causes of incidents, not only from a reactive standpoint, that would be things like stairs and ladders and like the compliance program, but actually from an interactive standpoint, how are you engaging your people and getting them to solve their own problems before the incidents can occur?
So a proactive approach.
And how? What is a proactive approach? In the book, there's a significant number of pages about how you engage people across all levels of the organization. The hourly people at the front ranks and the frontline supervisors bring knowledge of the facility and of the actions, and the upper management brings resources and a commitment and some pressure to keep working on these issues before the incidents. That is an engagement culture. Leadership works with employees. Who gets injured? The overwhelming majority are the frontline employees. And you need to engage them in resolving the issues rather than just being taken down.
I see. Okay, so in every factory, there will invariably be some workers or managers who want to get around safety measures in the name of increasing productivity. How can you prevent that?
Another good question. I can tell that you've had some experience in this area as a model. So that is a function of leadership. And my personal experience with small organizations, 20, 30 people, and large Fortune 20 organizations, tens of thousands of people, is that there's always some leadership that will be committed to not injuring employees if you assist them in a mechanism they can buy into. And so what I have done in those areas is I have found the managers, the leaders, that want to put forth the effort. And I start with them. So a recent organization I have worked with has maybe 500 sites worldwide. And I can't work with 500 sites, but I can work with five. And so with some interviews and some interaction and maybe even some pressure from upper management, we'll find those that small number of groups that wants to participate in a zero incident culture, developing and living one. And then I provide them resources and train them how to do this. It's in the book. And as we go through the book, they learn how to do it and they engage. After about a year of those four or five people, and this again is practical experience, that number doubles. The people say, oh, it can happen, and I won't be at risk for putting my resources and getting them flushed down the toilet and then being punished for not doing what I said I was going to help. That'll double or maybe triple the number of people. And by the way, the first, we'll just say N, but maybe four or five sites now have trained resources, and they can go train the next set of people that want to do this. And when you start looking at the recordable injury numbers, the reactive numbers, they are significantly less in those organizations that develop the culture of zero and live it. And by the third year, upper management, again, experience in a Fortune 20 company, CEO says, you will either do this or find a new manager. And that the pressure then comes from, you cannot escape developing a culture that does not put your people at risk and counts their injuries instead of preventing them.
So everything really does start with strong leadership.
It does. If you're not committed to doing anything, you're committed to doing nothing.
Interesting. I think you just touched upon this a little bit. However, in your book, you talk about how many companies take a reactive approach to safety. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
So, can I turn to a page in the book?
Absolutely.
I figured you'd look. On page 100, there's a chart that says, how are you judging safety? And in this world of developing accountabilities, you define what the accountability is. You train people how to do that accountability. You measure how well they do it, and then you give them recognition. Define, train, measure, recognize. And the recognition, you could say, oh, that's that little incentive thing. Not necessarily incentive, but it says you've done something well. In the define mode, we're looking at results and lagging indicators, stuff that's already behind you, and you can't do anything about them except lament. Here, we're defining accountabilities. What's an accountability? And I found that most people struggle with that concept, Jane, because as I was growing up and my father held me to accountabilities, it was all punitive. You will do this, or you will no longer use the car, etc. In the Marine Corps, it was kind of the same thing. You either did what they trained you to do or you didn't like the consequences. So now we've defined what it is that people do that help eliminate injuries. So I inspect the equipment before I start it up. I make sure that my lockout tagout program is functional. When I see something that's not right, I stop and address the issue. That's an accountability. And I train them, you train them, the facility trains them. They define the accountabilities. There's quite a few of them out there, but in a particular work cell, there's a half a dozen of these. And train them, what is the correct accountability? Have you demonstrated that? Can I count on you to demonstrate it from now on, even when you're off the job? And so from that, then measure how well they're doing it. Sometimes, you know, in the classic model, you measure how many injuries they had. Strictly reactive. Now, in this model, we're measuring what they need to do from an accountability. What does accountability mean? I can count on you to be able to do this job safely and correctly all of the time. So we've defined those things in the accountabilities. We measure how well they do. It could be just a observation program, or it could be, which I prefer, MBWA, management by walking around. And so I'll go out onto the floor and I will talk to the people. Tell me about your accountability for this particular process. And they need to be able to train me in how they've been trained. And then I give them recognition. Jennifer, that is exactly spot on. That's what needs to happen to eliminate injuries. And I'm glad you're participating in this.
So reinforcement, essentially.
Reinforcement, that is correct. Not money. Okay. And so when I've dealt with people worldwide, do they like the money? Yes. Do they like the trinkets? Yes. But when I ask them what a difference it makes, well over 90% of the people say personal recognition. Somebody coming up to me and actually saying they have evaluated what I'm doing, they appreciate what I'm doing, and they would like me to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That is the 1 minute manager approach. I observe in 1 minute, I tell them what they've done correctly and reinforce it, or in 1 minute, I make a correction for them. You know, when you laid that ladder up against the wall, you did not cleat it at the bottom and you did not tie it off at top. That's going to save you maybe 2 minutes, or it's going to cause you to be in pain for the rest of your life. I want you to do 2 minutes. You understand, Jennifer?
I do.
There you go.
Defining things and setting a solid foundation, which leads into safety culture. And basically the next question is, how can manufacturers create a safety culture?
It's decide to stop the bleeding. Had enough of this. I've gone to enough hospitals. I care about the people that are working here, and I have committed to work with you to develop a culture, not a punitive culture and not a laissez-faire. Whatever you do is okay with me. Just get the product out the door. A culture that does the job right every time, all the time, on the job and off the job. Because when you look at the statistics, most significant injuries and fatalities occur off the job. And so we've trained these people how to do it correctly. And I expect them to hold themselves responsible and their family members responsible. Correct safety at home, on the road, at the bar. I don't know if you can do that, but you get the idea. They've developed a lifestyle. As opposed to, I do safety when I'm on the job, and the rest of my life, I do whatever I want.
Interesting. Okay, so our final question today is, how can manufacturers sustain progress on safety?
Now, you know, the easy answer to that is, it's a commitment. That's not really an answer. That's just a platitude, a word. And so in the book, the book is broken into three parts, Jennifer. The first part, whenever you go into an organization, you know, if I go into an organization that has a safety culture, I've got a person there, one or more, that have been trained in safety, and the rest of them haven't been. And so I need to be able to, as we bring those people onto continuous improvement teams, and the continuous improvement is going to be in safety, I need to train them some of the basics in safety and what causes injuries and how do you develop a culture that doesn't have them. And then the second one, we start building on that basic and introducing tools that allow them to engage in a culture where everyone takes responsibility and accountability. And then the third is kind of the payoff. Here's the how you lead this from a leadership standpoint, both hourly and management salary. And that portion then is in those last six chapters. You're going to see taking a group of people, hourly, salary, upper management, and developing a safety task force leadership group that focuses every month on what are our issues and puts together small continuous improvement teams, kind of 4 to 6 people, and analyzes what all the issues are, develops a solution to all those issues, delivers the accountabilities, trains those, define, train, measure, recognize, puts that across that. That is the heart of how you do it, Jennifer. You now have to have this leadership group that is committed, and they meet on a regular basis, and they focus on issues that their people, the people on the floor, the supervision, the hourly, the facility leadership said, we got to solve this one. They don't work on, oh, we had a bad audit. No, they work on, these are things that could lead to injury. And some of them could be fundamental safety training. Some of them could be, a risk assessment. Risk assessment is common, but most everybody can recognize the risk. It's what do they do after they've recognized it? Oh, yeah, that's a problem. That's not good enough. And so we're going to train them how to do a good risk assessment that leads to changing the way we operate in chapter 21.
Okay. I see. So implementing a strategy after you've analyzed, basically, then.
Correct. And those tools they're not trained in classical safety. Classical safety is compliance. The government says thou shalt or thou shalt not, but they're all based on static. You know, do you have a lockout tank? Do you have personal protective equipment, et cetera? It's not what's between the ears of our people and how they are living a culture that doesn't put people at risk and takes responsibility having that culture of nobody.
Great. Mike, thank you so much for your time and expertise. Before we go, could you tell our listeners where your book is available for purchase?
Yes. One of the slides will have a picture of the book and where you bought. Wiley.com is the publisher. And if you go to Wiley.com and the book Delivering Safety Excellence and Engagement Culture at Every Level, after the first word or two, it'll pop right up and it's there. It's also available, like everything else in the world, on Amazon. Generally, there's a few copies there if you need it. 100 or so, if you are going to initiate this across a nation and held people responsible and have them give book reports in their safety groups, then you would need to go to Wiley to get it.
Thank you so much. For more insights on assembling discrete parts into finished products and the people behind it all, visit our website, assemblymag.com, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast to keep up with our latest episodes. We're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, so we invite you to follow us there too. This has been Assembly Audible. Thanks for listening.